For the purpose of the recording, can you please state your name and where you grew up and where you live?
Oh, well, my name is Peter Bird, born in just on the border of Great Cornard and Little Cornard in Sudbury, near Sudbury. And what else do you want to know? I was when I was born there, weren't I?
Yes, but how old are you now?
How old am I now? I'm 93.
That's it.
So I've been about a while.
That's right. Seen and done a few things.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
And yourself, Doreen?
Yeah.
And yourself?
Yes, well, I'm Doreen Bird. As you know, I was born in Edwardstone. Mm. Yes, and I'm 93.
I guess a quick question would be, what did you do during the war?
What did I did?
So you were quite young?
Well, oh yes, I was at school. In school in Sudbury. Other than go to school, that was a case of going around the hedges and looking for birds' nests and looking for rabbits might take home for a meal, that sort of thing. But otherwise, really, where we were, we didn't know there was a war on. I mean, we never saw or heard anything much, apart from when that was got dark, you could go up the garden and look over towards Sudbury and the Stour Valley, and you could see the searchlights from the different places. We had no idea where they were at the time, but yes, that's what we used to do, just wander about, around the fields, around the, that sort of thing. Played about in the road. We used to play games like tag. Have you heard of them, I suppose? You know, silly, just ordinary, simple games. Where we lived, there was a row of to eight in blocks of two council houses, Prospect Hill, and there was enough of us. Children, we all used to congregate outside up the road on the junction and play, because there was no traffic about then. The only people who had a motor car and that in those days was the local farmer and the vicar. They were the only people that had their own cars, so they were the only ones we saw. You didn't see any other traffic.
I suppose it must have been very expensive to own a car back then,
as
well. It must have been quite expensive to own a car at the time.
Well, there again, I don't know. that was only the people who were well off who had one, so that more or less answered your question there. as I say, farmers and the local vicar.
Who was doing the milk round and that sort of stuff then?
Oh, Freddie Brown, that's Sackett's Green.
Was he did he have his Rolls Royce then?
Well, no, not
then.
Not during the war.
No.
No. Just after the war, that's when he had he had several cars. He always used to have one of these Austin 6. He used to have on the front, saloon. They were biggish square things. He used to have that, but out of the blue, he bought an old Rolls Royce, and so he used to come with that in that.
He used to deliver the milk in a Rolls Royce.
Yeah,
and we had a baker as well, Albie Gaskin. He was.
Oh yes, we had two bakers, didn't we? Yeah, Albie Gaskin and Mr. Death.
That's right.
What was his name now, Death?
I can't remember his first name. But,
Yeah.
Sydney, I think. His name was. I'm not sure. I think it was Sydney.
And do you remember what your father did during the war?
Well, he worked on the railways. And, you know, like he always did. He was what we called then a relief porter. But he was... That title that covered him for doing various jobs on in the, you know, with the railway, of course. I mean, he could be, they could ask him to go, what, you know, somewhere 15, 16 miles away as a shunter. And or he could go on the platform side of it, and he'd be a ticket collector. And I used to, when I first left school, that's what my job was, on Sudbury Station. And I used to snip the people's tickets as they come through, they wanted to go to London or somewhere. But Father was, as I say, his title covered him for lots of different railway jobs on the railway.
He did some guard jobs as well, didn't he?
Hmm?
He did guard work as well, didn't he?
Ah, that was the latter part. Yeah, that wasn't during the war. That was the latter part of his work and life. I mean, he was on the railway. He worked on the railway for 54 years, I think it is.
He did, yeah.
Yes. And I mean, so he progressed from Warden Relief Porter, and he could do all sorts of jobs. As he had a relief, what he called a relief, he was a relief porter. So he could go, be asked to go sort of all over the place. He used to cycle, but you know, had a bicycle for miles sometimes.
Cycle to Bury St Edmunds to work and back very often.
Yes.
And to Colchester.
Yeah.
Haverhill.
Not so much Colchester, because that was Essex.
Yeah.
But he did, he used to go, you know, via the country roads, and that's at Marksday, Chapel and Wakescombe, Bewers, Cavendish, Glemsford, going the other way, Lavenham.
And did he work on any of the trains during the war, like moving bombs around or moving troops around?
Oh, yes, he did a lot of that. He was a guard. Then as well, because he was a relief porter, but he could do guard duties as well. And I mean, he actually finished his time up as a guard. But during the war, he was here, there, and everywhere. Really, I mean, he used to cycle for miles, according to where he was working. He'd be working, so you know, like they used to. Goods trains, you know, moving the bombs from above to the different airfields. About what we had then,
were you?
I mean, we were surrounded by airfields.
Were you aware of what he was doing at the time, and like that he was moving bombs to the airfields and things?
Oh yes.
Would he speak about it?
Hmm?
Would he talk about it as well?
Not really.
Hmm.
I mean, to him, that was his job. You know, he never used to come home and say, well, I've been so-and-so today. We had a train load of, goods train load of bombs to take somewhere. No, he never used to talk about it, and we didn't used to bother asking him, because that was just life, you know.
And then a couple of your brothers were in the war as well, and your sister as well.
No, only had one. Mm. One brother during the war, the eldest brother.
Mm.
He volunteered for the Royal Navy in 1939, and he was in the 6 years of the war he was in.
And what was
but
his
he
name?
Was very lucky. Pardon?
What was his name?
George.
Well, that's what we always called him. He always went by George. His real name was Ernest Leonard.
Ernest Leslie, yeah.
Oh.
Huh? Ernest Leslie.
Oh, Leslie, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Father's name was Leonard.
The reason the George came in was because grandfather's name was George. And as you go down family trees, you'll very often find that the first son born was named after the grandfather. And he wasn't. But as it turned out, everybody called him George anyway. So, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's how he got his name. I'm not 100% certain, but yeah.
No, I don't know. He was, you know, as I say, he was known as George.
And you joined the Navy shortly after the war when you were...
No.
Oh, sorry.
Not this one.
Oh, sorry. Apologies.
Yeah.
But did he speak much about the war?
Who? Brother George?
Yeah.
Well, yes. He you know, he came home with tales. He didn't used to talk a lot about it. I must admit. But I mean, yes, he used to come home on leave, and most of the time when it was time to go back, I used to walk with him from where we lived there and down to Sudbury Station when he went back off leave. But you see, he didn't used to chat much about it. I mean, he just used to say, being the age I was, 8 year old now, I was more interested in what the ships were like and that sort of thing. And, you know, he did tell me he was on the Fiji, a cruiser, during the war. That was one of the ships he was on. And when he was on that, that got sunk in the Battle of Crete. That would have been, 42, something like that, I suppose, 1942, 1943 there. And he just used to say he was in the water, swimming in the water for about 3 hours, you know, being machine gunned by the Germans, you know, machine gunned the people in the water. Mm-hmm. But luckily enough, he didn't catch one, so... And they were rescued, fortunately. But he wasn't taken prisoner. He was brought back, you know, back to Blighty, and they went. I forget what his next boat was. But the Fiji was the one that got sunk in the Battle of Crete. But he, you know, other than that, he never talked much about what was going on and that sort of thing. You know, he just used to say, you know, but tell us about the German aircraft bombing the ships when because being on a cruiser, he used to escort the convoys from coming from America and Canada and that area. So that was one of the duties, what he used to do. And of course, they used to put forever under fire. That wasn't only from the aircraft, old enemy aircraft. It was from the German U-boats as well. You know, there was a lot of our ships torpedoed by the German U-boats. So, luckily enough, as I say, apart from that one ship he sunk on, he came through it all, come back home after the war. So he's very lucky.
And your mum, she stayed at home during the war?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we were at home. The war was as if there was no war on. You know, I mean, everything, we lived out in the country. And I mean, apart from the air raid siren going down from in Sudbury, and if the wind was in the wrong direction, we couldn't hear that anyway. We used to, you know, we knew there was a raid, air raid warden, you could hear the aeroplanes coming over our way and going on their way to London. And, that was just life for us.
And you said you could differentiate the bombers from between the American and the Allied forces to the German bombers heading towards London as well.
That is what I mean. That's what I'm saying. You could hear the bombs coming. They didn't all come over our area. Of course, they were coming in from different directions, I suppose. Mm. But then when the doodlebugs started, they used to fly on. They were piggybacked. I expect you've seen them, pictures of them on there. They used to fly up over to Harwich, it was just over here. And then they'd, start fire them or whatever they did to them and launch them towards London. Mm-hmm. So we could often see them stand on our front gate step and watch them coming. They used to come via from where we were then. They used to come from Newton. You know Newton Green Golf Club and that sort of place? Yeah, well... From where we lived then, they used to come from that area.
come from the
and
east.
And we could see them coming with the like jet engines, you see. But I mean, they were the only things that had a jet engine. They hadn't developed jet engines then.
But the German aircraft had diesel engines, so they
yes,
were more identified.
That's right. So, I mean, we always knew when there was a German aircraft going over because of the noise of the diesel engine compared with the most our aircraft, you see, were all gasoline. Cool.
And were you scared by the aircrafts, or was it just every day?
Oh, heavens, no. We were dead keen. I mean, if we heard one coming down, they were... Call my mate next door, my next door neighbour, who was the same age as me. And we used to stand out on our front step from about 6 o'clock in the evening when that was dark and watch for them to come. And, as I say, we could tell by the sound of the engines as to whether that was a German aircraft or one of ours. So... Yes, that was all a game to us, really. I mean, we never had any... we didn't have any, really, bombs drop. There was bombs dropped in Little Cornard. There was a searchlight crew in Little Cornard. And, we used to go out, this friend's next door, and myself... used to go out and stand on the front, watching things happen, as if there was... And when we hear the sound of the engines, we could tell whether that was one of ours or whether that was a German. Because they never had lights on during the war aircraft. Everything, you just went by sound as to where they were. But, really, to us, as I say, that was all fun and games.
And then there was a plane that crashed nearby, wasn't there, in the field?
Yes, down just over the other side of the railway track between Sudbury and Mark's Bay. Okay. Yeah, that was, I can't remember offhand what the date was, but I mean that I think that was after the war. Yeah, there it is. Yes, that's it. That was on a Sunday morning. That was the W on the tail was because that was on that came from the aerodrome at Wellingfield. Yeah, they all had during the war, though, according to what aircraft they were based of what aerodrome they were based at.
Okay.
And this one, yes, we went down there. We heard, I don't know how we first heard about it, but of course. My friend, we lived sort of where this picture is, if you can, it's up, going in that direction over there, and of course the land was higher, and that was where we lived, and as I say, we went down there on our bikes as quick as we could possibly go, and there was nobody there, but we were able to get into it, climb in it, and we climbed all over it and sat in the seats and like you would, that age, and there were bombs on it apparently, but they'd been taking them off before, so before anybody could get near it. But that happened early morning, so I don't know sort of what time it happened, because the railway line is there. That house there, look, is. It was the gatekeeper's house. There's some gates just the other side. You can't see them because of the air. This is blocking the view. But that was the crossing keeper. And you can see, but the aeroplane, although us, when you see it like this, as facing that way, as it's facing Sudbury. Mm-hmm. Because the railway line went from there, see, down into Sudbury. Well, apparently what we heard was that he came from Sudbury direction when he knew he was going to crash, and he come down low along the open meadows run beside the railway line, and he caught his wing on a tree yeah, which turned the plane round. So when he actually crashed, that's where he finished up. Yes.
I don't suppose you would have taken a souvenir or anything like that as a kid?
Well, I did, but when I say a souvenir, we were able to climb it and got about. What I found was I'd never seen one like that before, but what I found was a small spanner. And that was a ratchet spanner, you know. Well, we'd never heard of them because they were American tools, you see. And that had sockets that you, different sizes, and you could turn it with a little tiny lever up the back of it as to whether you want to undo a nut or do a nut up. Mm-hmm. And I found this, it was only a bit that long, and I had it for years, but I haven't got it now. I don't know where it went.
Bob had it.
But, you know.
I didn't realise it was a crash there.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's that one that crashed at Cornered Road.
Oh, yeah. I see, yeah, Cornered Road on the Sips.
Well, fascinating. That's where we go past.
Yeah, I see where it is.
Yeah. If you go up the footpath there and go over that way,
who
that takes you to the main.
Who took the picture?
Oh, heaven no.
I think that might have been a record called picture from the people at the airfield, the Americans.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was taken, that was found later, and that was a picture that appeared in the local paper. But, do you know the boy Reed?
Reed?
Yeah, he got arrested because he was taking stuff out of it, and he was sent to Borstal.
That's right. Tad, we used to
Tad
call
Reed.
Him. Tad Reed, yes. Oh, yes, he lived just over from there. You walk over the other, that railway line runs along there, you see.
Yeah.
And he lived, if you walked on that footpath, that you can't see, that ran over there, on, you went onto the main road between Bewers and Sudbury. Mm-hmm. And this Tony Reed we're talking about, Tad, we used to call him, he lived in a little thatched house. I don't know whether the tail is blocking the view, but if it wasn't, it was here somewhere on the main road.
It's still there now on Mere Corner.
Hmm?
It's still there now on Mere Corner.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, they're still there.
Do you know what he took to have gotten nicked?
Sorry?
Do you know what he took? Or do you recall what he had taken from the...
Oh, no, I had no idea, but
the rumour was he'd taken some tools.
Right.
That was what was recorded was that he'd taken tools.
Yes.
And how many or what, I don't know.
Well, yes, but Tad would have been the I should imagine if he wasn't the first young chap to get on it. He must have been the first one there because, I mean, what had happened to the crew? I suppose the crew had bailed out. I don't know.
He landed it. The pilot landed it.
Yes, I know. The pilot was still there. He landed it like that and brought it down. But the reason that's facing the opposite way to where that was coming is because the wing caught a... Mm-hmm. I don't know where that caught. I couldn't have hurt a tree, but on this part of the... land here, what that landed on, this was common
pasture,
yes. Mm. It was several acres of it, but to stop German aircraft trying to land there, the government, they put up posts. I don't know how far apart they was, about as far as the length of our bungalow, I suppose. And it was a strong, quite a decent sized wire tied to the post, so aircraft couldn't land on it. That was what they were for. And I reckon he caught one of them as he come up there. And that's what turned him round, so he's facing.
Hey, did you get that picture then, Jerry?
That's a local press paper.
Oh,
Bob had this one.
Oh, I see.
And him and Norman Gain went through it together.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
And how long was the plane there for? Was it gone fairly quickly, or was it like a...
Well, only... yes, it was only there for a matter of two or three days. Because, I mean, where he's landed there, that's not far, as the crow fly, to the aerodrome where he come from. Wallingfield.
And then did you have much interaction with the soldiers that were in the air bases nearby or anything? Did you see them around the town, or...?
Well, not... We did used to see some, but not that many. There was that. I mean, we had... I don't know what really you'd call it now, but... where we lived, just down the road, as the crow fly, we're talking about 500 yards. And there's a big sort of house that's called Prospect House. And... of course, the government took over these places like that, that were big houses and belonged to farmers or somebody of that like anybody with lots of money that had a big house. But the government took them over and they billeted troops in there. So we had troops billeted in that place, Prospect House, but I can't remember for the life of me what regiment they were. I found Ken this morning. I mentioned that to him, but I clearly forgot about it. He might have remembered.
What about the rectory during the war years? Was that?
Yes.
Was there ever a prat there? Because that was...
That was used for evacuees.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Yeah. The old rectory.
London evacuees.
Yeah. That was... The old rectory was the original rectory to the church.
Okay.
And that was taken over during the war years and used for evacuees, and that also had some of the kinder children that came in.
That's right.
Kinder children came into Harwich, and they were dispersed around the area with different homes and so on. And some of them were actually in the rectory with the evacuees as well.
And would they, I mean, get along with the local children as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, they were, you know, we were all... I said one of them was a mate of mine, sort of thing. You know, you couldn't be but they were all, sort of, you know, joined in with went to our local schools and that sort of thing. And yes, they were quite, some of them were a bit, you know, coming from London and out into the country like where we lived. They didn't think too much of that, but I mean, they got no say in the matter then.
Yeah.
So cool.
Grandmother Bird, during the war, because she had all the foster kids, didn't she?
Yes.
Was that during the war years as well? Do you remember?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Oh, yes.
My grandmother lived in Great Cornard, and she fostered Bernardo's children through the war years and a bit after, I think.
Yes.
And I've actually got a book at home written by one of the children.
That's right.
He named the book Mrs. Bird's 23rd Little Varmint. And he's written a book about grandparents who fostered him and a lot of other of those children through the years, and including the war years.
Yeah, I never did get his book. Dennis Sloan was his
Dennis,
name.
That's right, Dennis. Yeah, I've got a copy of his book.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have. I don't know whether Barney had one, but I have read some of it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, what's next? Bird nesting. Rook shooting.
George's medals. Yeah.
Yes.
Got a Star of Africa.
That's right. I don't know what they are, really.
I think it's a Crete star, isn't it? Is that the, I've forgotten the names of them there.
But I don't know. Could
they're written on them if you can read them. But
are they?
Yeah. That's his war service medal, 39-45 medal.
That's going to say, yeah. That's
It's on the front, look.
Hang on. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, it's written on the bottom. That's what that one is. That's the service star. That one. This one is the Atlantic. That's right. That was the Atlantic star because he was He was supporting the convoys. That's the Atlantic Star. That's the Africa Star.
Yes.
Because he did service in that part as well. And those two would have been for his Essential Mediterranean service.
Service, yeah.
Do you remember him telling you about being a button boy?
Well, who?
Being a button boy at Shotley.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought. Because I can't find...
They went to Ganges. That's where he went to train.
What's a button boy? That's the boy up there.
That's at Shotley, over here. As the crow fly about 7 or 8 miles over there.
Mm. That's where they trained when they first went. When they were 16-year-old, they went to Ganges to train to the seamanship.
Naval Training Centre.
Yeah. And this was their passing out parade.
That's right.
Yeah.
When each batch passed out, they stood on the masts of the mast there, and the button boy was the one what stood up there.
Up that one.
Up here, right at the very top.
Yeah.
Do you remember his passing parade?
Sorry?
Do you have any memories of him when he went through the parade himself?
No, it was during the war, wasn't it?
Well, Brother George, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, yes, I can remember him, but I mean, we didn't see much of him, really. I mean, he served the 6 years of the war. And, I mean, he was stationed and was out on the ships. He was on a cruiser called Fiji.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, that is it. Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Lovely, yes. And then he was on one called the Ajax. For a while, not for long, on that one. And because he was in the Navy, he volunteered for the Navy, and he was in the Navy, but he, for some reason, best known for himself, I suppose, he transferred into the Fleet Air Arm.
That's right.
So he was still in the Navy, but he was in the Fleet Air Arm, which is what all the pictures about. And that's how come he was on the, as I say, on the cruiser.
That's where that comes
Fiji,
from, the message.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind.
Because
it as well.
Yes, this is something he sent to Mother from because they weren't allowed to send letters or anything to give it.
Oh no!
Where they were, but he was at that time when he went Fleet Air Arm. He was 835 Naval Air Squadron. And it was just a poem to the best mother in the world.
Oh, right.
Though we cannot be together, these troubled times to share, remember this, dear mother, it is my constant prayer that God will guide and keep you free from every pain till the time of war is over and we can meet again.
Yeah, nice.
And that was from George to dearest mother.
That's right.
Oh,
lovely. I hadn't seen that.
So that was the sort of cards that they were allowed to send, because if they wrote anything, that had to be...
Redacted.
Thank you.
I used to be able to write letters, but the letters had to be censored.
Even the ones.
And sometimes when Mother, she didn't get many letters, mind you, bear in mind. But when she got a letter from him, that wasn't a page like this. There'd be bits cut out of it. Down a bit here, a bit there, a bit down there, because that's where the censors would open them, and that's what they cut them bits out, what they weren't supposed to be.
It'd be fully redacted, and then after the war, did your brother talk to you much about it? Did he seem different, perhaps, or
about?
After the war, did your brother seem different, if you remember how he was before the war, or if he changed in any way?
Well, no, not really. He didn't come back I suppose he came back as a different, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, to us, because we were that much younger.
They went in as boys and come out as men, didn't they?
Put
it that way. Yeah.
Yes, certainly did that.
Yeah.
But no, he would tell him he'd tell me about the Fiji and the Battle of Crete, where they got sunk, and he got a picture, he had a picture of the Fiji lying on its side.
Yeah.
And he said he told me they had three more direct hits.
Yeah.
And that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't think I've got the picture of it laying on its side. I've seen it. But I haven't actually, I don't know, I think I've actually got it. It is online, actually, if you look it up on online HMS Fiji, it brings up a few pictures of it. And one of them, I believe, it's either got that or HMS, because it was with, it went to rescue HMS Greyhound. It was sent with HMS Gloucester.
Yes.
To rescue the Greyhound. The Greyhound was too badly damaged when they got there. In going in, Gloucester got badly hammered, and that was totally disabled virtually. So Fiji did a quick spin on that and threw them life rafts to try and leave the guys something to get into. And then it tried to get out itself because that had run out of ammunition. And on its way out, that then got caught by the dive bombers as well and sank that. So there is a ministry report on it post the event where they said it was that the order to send it in to get the Greyhound was completely wrong because they ended up losing three ships when they should only have lost one. And there's lots of information about it online, actually. I've got quite a lot of it, actually.
Mm.
Was that public knowledge at the time?
This was post-war, effectively, when when the various inquiries were held and so on and so forth to some of the bits and pieces, really.
So I guess regarding the war, because you were saying that you felt quite removed from it at the time. How did you get your news at the time about what was going on in the world and during the war as well?
Well, through the newspaper and the wireless.
Mm-hmm.
Radio, they call them these days, but that nowadays, we're talking about it. It's what we call a wireless.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you could fiddle with the controls and get stations from various areas, places. You get that. The Germans had a character who used to come on propaganda, Lord Haw-Haw, his name was. And I don't quite know now what sort of what do you call it, station or what?
What program that was?
Hmm?
What program?
Well, not program as such, but what they called them. You could tune in,
yeah,
with a wireless, to various stations and where they all over the world, really. But not too far away. But the Germans had a propaganda program, and this client, he called himself, he speaks good English. Lord Haw-Haw was what he was named, but whether he was named that by the English people, I don't know. But he used to come on the station and you hear what he's got talk about it, but he was always on about it, and he mentioned towns and small towns, market towns, that's what he, and we haven't forgotten, so-and-so, we haven't forgotten Sudbury in Suffolk, market town, and that's the sort of thing he would come out with, in other words, we watch out, because we know where you are, and you're going to get bombed. That's what it boiled down to.
Yeah.
But
German propaganda radio.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Anything else?
I just wanted to talk more about the diet a little bit of during the war. So you mentioned before about rabbits and pheasants and. I just wanted to know, did you enjoy the meals? And could you tell the difference between, I guess, regular meat, like lamb? You were mentioning that your mum liked to cook, like a lamb.
Yes. Well, you could get meat, but it was like everything else. It was rationed.
Mm.
But we were fortunate, more fortunate than some families, because as far as rations go, because coming from a big family, mother was able to get the total amount of whatever it was she was looking for, like some beef or a lamb or whatever, pulled it all together, and then that made a not as big a joint as you really wanted, but that was a, you know, make a nice, my mother would make a nice meal out of that, and that would last a couple of days.
Bought all the coupons, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you allowed some.
You all had food coupons. Yeah.
And then yes. all the bones went into the stew.
Yes,
to make the stew.
That's
all
right.
All the vegetables went into the stew. Yeah. So you then had
Well, you could get bones. I can't remember whether bones were on the ration or whether that was a case of first come, first served.
The butcher used to ration it. The butcher himself used to ration that, didn't he?
Yes, I think so.
I can remember going down and getting shins of beef and so on and so forth.
That's
and
right.
I was only allowed to have that much of it or whatever.
That's right, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Will you go down Eagles?
Down to George,
Mother used down to say.
George the butcher.
Will you go down to Eagles and say they got any bones?
Yes, I know.
And then she would make a big saucepan full of... boil them and we get a big sort of stock and then she would put potatoes and dumplings and things like that. And
I had a fascinating discussion with the children at school about suet pudding.
That's right.
And about dumplings.
Yes.
To say how you packed out the stew and made it into a big meal.
That's
know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, we never, one with the children, you know.
I still make suet dumplings.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
In the winter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have a favourite meal, if you remember, from the time?
Favourite meal? Well, I can't think of. I used to like Mother's meat pudding, but they were few and far between during the war. Yeah. She could make a lovely meat pudding.
They were the ones I was telling you about this morning, where... she'd have a not much meat, but the meat would be made with some vegetables and so on, and then she'd line the pot out
with
suet pudding, which was called the inside pud, and then there'd be an outside pud, you'd go around the outside of that. That would all go in a big cloth into a big saucepan.
Yes.
And then when it came out, you'd have this fabulous meat pudding. The inside pud, as we called it, was soaked with... The
juices and the gravy
and so on. That was virtually all of our favourites, really. I think. but it stayed with you for at least the rest of the day and most of the night sometimes as well, didn't it?
Yeah. Yes, that was a favourite meal for Mother's.
Yeah.
Kept you going.
Apple pudding in a cloth was another one, wasn't it?
What?
Apple pudding in a cloth.
Yes. There you are. Now you're talking about a dessert. She used to roll out a big piece of dough there, and then she would chop up apples and put them in it. Then she would fold it over into a... that would be on a cloth. That wouldn't be on the same as bare table. And then bend a cloth, and then she would gather the cloth up and fix it with a safety pin. And that was in the saucepan, boiling for, quite a while.
3 hours.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was an apple pudding. Nobody could make one like that.
One of my brothers who married... the sister down the road, that was the other brother in the Navy, the younger one, Barney.
Oh, yes.
And I went to visit him many, many years later, actually, this was. And as I went round the corner, his wife said, "Well, go back to your mother then," and something went flying over the farmyard next door. And it was a pudding that she'd made in a cloth for him that just... He took one look at it and tried it. He said, "That's nowhere near as good as Mum's." So she picked it up and she threw it over the farmyard next door and told him to go back to his mother.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see it doing that.
Yeah, there was another couple of words mixed
in. Yeah, no,
yes. That was Peg.
That was, yeah. That's
yes.
Oh, dear.
Fun days, really.
Lord, yeah.
Well, I guess the last question I have really is, do you remember D-Day, and did you celebrate it afterwards, Armistice Day? Or
oh, yes, D-Day. Everybody celebrated D-Day. I mean, I suppose I can't remember exactly, but I mean, I know school children, and that they were the adults, you know, people, I suppose they made everybody contributed something or other, and so everybody celebrated it, and I mean, us children, were, of course, it was all a party.
Mm.
And I mean, we relied on the local parents and that, seeing that they managed to contribute something or other to the, and made made a nice party.
Oh, yeah.
And then during V-Day or Armistice Day, did you guys celebrate it yearly, or was it a day of remembering or mourning? Because I was told that there was a party at the village hall after V-Day.
Oh, well, yes. Well, that is what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know which way you came from Sudbury in the car, but you come past little corner of Village Hall, wouldn't you?
No, we didn't come. We did come from home, actually, but yes, we did. We did go past it. Remember, you had Spout Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the little corner of Village Hall was at the bottom of Spout Lane. Yes. Yeah.
That stands sort of high because the banks, the land's high. Oh, yeah, there. That's where we used to have our. And I mean, we were lucky, really, because where we lived was sort of. We lived on just over the border with Great Cornard. Well, we went to Great Cornard School as children. And that. So, of course, we always used to get two Christmas parties. Because we went to corner school, so we went to corner great corner school parties, and we also went to little corner school parties because we lived in little corner just over the border. So we were treated very well in that respect.
Yeah. You took advantage of the system.
Yeah.
Oh yes, we were lucky.
Oh man, aren't we girls? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
We did have my sister-in-law and her sisters at the time who lived in just down the road from us, and they were a lot of those were in the Land Army, the Women's Land Army, which we didn't talk about to the kids at all this morning actually, but obviously the Women's Land Army was a big thing because obviously all the guys were away and the ladies used to
were
sort of running the farms and working on the farms and driving the machinery and so on and so forth, what machinery there was.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, did you have the chance to ask her if she enjoyed it or what she thought?
They had a wonderful time.
I think if you ask any lady who was in the Women's Land Army, they had a wonderful time.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some pictures of that there as well.
I remember them being chased around the corn stacks, you know, when the fields were being cut with corn, they farmers used to build stacks, and they used to fun and games. Oh yes, top end of a century.
Yeah.
Yes, there were several of them dropped in Billy Hayward's.
That's it.
Field. Yeah. When father was on, he was on fire watch that night.
Yeah.
That happened.
Did he speak of that?
Hmm?
That's the bottom of it. That's an incendiary bomb.
Yeah. Oh, where'd you find out?
Yeah, that's belonged to Norman Game. Do you remember Norman?
Yeah.
That was one of his.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the field. That's
and that's the field that comes on the top, yes.
Yeah, that's your incendiary bomb. Yeah.
Yes.
The kids like that this morning, you can imagine.
Yeah, I bet they did, yes.
But we used to have about 20 of those hanging up.
I was going to say, you used to find loads of them, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah,
and when we wandered round the fields, we used to pick up streams of this foil paper.
That's right.
That was one side of it was black, and the other side was foil, and that was about what, an inch or just about an inch wide. And of course, the Jerry's used to drop that, and because that scrambled up the receptions of the various aerodromes about, you know, for their
radar and wireless.
Radar and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was told as well that the paper was later used as wrapping paper further down the line. I don't know if you had done that in your family or if you have any memories of it.
Well, no, because I mean it was in it was strips.
Yeah.
As I say, that was black paper one side, but the other side was foil thin. I mean that was only about that wide, you know. And you used to walk around the fields, and of course you'd keep picking up loads of this where that was been launched from up there, and of course some of it, I expect, broke up as it come down, I don't know, but all that as it landed, caught in a tree, things like that.
Did you ever pick up any parts with the swastika on or anything like that over the years?
No.
Barney always reckoned that if he could find a bit with the swastika on, he got £5 for it, but...
Well, yes, I suppose you could then, but no, nothing like that. Well, we never had anything, really, never had anything drop, you know.
Well, only the odd.
I mean, the nearest, bomb. I was just trying to think.
They dropped the bomb up near the water tower, didn't they? That one went off.
Oh, yes.
That was a stray bomb. And then there was, well, Dad saw the doodlebug go down at Mount Buers. That was one of the first ones that was around our part of the world.
Yes, I remember.
Mother saw the one that went down at Rippers.
It went?
The doodlebug that went down at Rippers, blew Rippers factory up at Sibwellingham.
I've seen it. Oh, well, yes.
Yeah, Mother said she walked around the corner and the light went off just as that went over the house, and then it went down and took out Rippers factory.
Rippers factory, yes. Timber yard.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah? Oh, well, that could well be, you know. We used to watch the doodlebugs.
Yeah.
Coming up, you know, stand on the front step to the front gates and watch them coming through Deeks's Park. Mm. You see the light, you see, then they used to come over. Made a terrific noise. Because that was the first time we ever heard or seen the jet engine. And of course, they'd got no means of silence or anything like that on it. They used to make a terrific noise. And of course, when the light went out, you had to dive for cover.
Mm. Do you remember the bombs that went off?
Oh, yes. I remember them going off, yes. Mm. I mean, one night we was on, like I say, my neighbour's mate next door and myself, out on our front step and watching for them to come. And this one came over and as that got sort of more or less opposite us, they were heading to London, you see, and the light went out. So we dashed round the back and shouted indoors, the light's gone out, so, you know, they knew what we meant. So, of course, we all dived wherever we could get, not knowing where that was going to come down. And there was a terrific bang. And I thought that it landed. It used to stand in our, where we lived then, in our back garden. And if you look straight over, you could see a little corner church. And that's where we thought that it landed. But it hadn't, that it landed a couple of three fields further over when we found out. Bob was holding on the limb prop. Yes, I...
Poor little Bob.
So I died. Yeah, Bob was holding on the limb prop.
Mother always used to complain about Joan, because Joan wouldn't...
Joan, not Joan, my sister.
She wouldn't get under the table. She'd sit up and...
She'd be at the table, because we only had oil lamps in those days, you know, no electrics. And my sister, she was a real keen reader, and she sat at the table like this, and with a book here, and she'd be reading a book. And used to say to her, "Yeah, so anything like that, come on, must get out, get out. Not fear, no fear. She'd still be there like that.
A little bit on the stubborn side, that particular sister was. I had two sisters who were extremely stubborn.
Yeah. Well, Joan was. I don't know. Yeah, Jean weren't so bad.
No, Joy was pretty stubborn. Still is, for that matter. But yeah.
Joy. Is she?
Oh, yeah.
Mum's in the family box.
Yeah. Oh, well, I
know somebody else who's a little bit like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.